Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 6, Text 11. After my departure, I passed through many flourishing metropolises, towns, villages, animal farms, mines, agricultural lands, valleys, flower gardens, nursery gardens, and natural forests. Purport. Man's activities in agriculture, mining, farming, industries, gardening, etc., were all on the same scale as they are now, even previous to the present creation, and the same activities will remain as they are even in the next creation. After many hundreds of millions of years, one creation is started by the law of nature, and the history of the universe repeats itself practically in the same way. The mundane wranglers waste time with archaeological excavations without searching into the vital necessities of life. After getting an impetus in spiritual life, Sri Narad Muni, even though a mere child, did not waste time for a single moment with economic development, although he passed towns and villages, mines and industries. He continually went on to progressive spiritual emancipation. Srimad Bhagavatam is the repetition of history, which happened some hundreds of millions of years ago. As it is said herein, only the most important factors of history are picked up to be recorded in this transcendental literature. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshuram Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yatav Padagamalam Shri Gurun Navaishnavangscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is the narrative of Narad Muni's life in a previous creation, spoken by Narad Muni himself. He's talking about how he left whatever was left of his home, didn't appear to have a father, and then his mother also died, and he was only a son of a maidservant. I mean, only, he had no social position, probably no property. So anyway, he left, and he's describing how he went through so many towns, villages, pasturing grounds, in which there might have been opportunities for work, but he wasn't interested. He was looking for Krishna. Prabhupada makes the point in this purport. He often picks up what appears to be a tangential point, or not even the point that's the main point that's being expressed, and he makes some comment that we can deduce, what we can deduce from this. So we can deduce from this that in the previous creation, and in all previous creations, there were farms, towns, pasturing grounds, mines, villages, nursery gardens, and so on. And that the whole human civilization was going on much in the same way as it's going on now. Of course, we can not only deduce this from Narad Muni's narration, but that is clearly there in Shastra. That how bhutva bhutva praliyate, how again and again Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, this material cosmos is brought into being and is again and again destroyed. Now, this goes against the modern misnamed scientific paradigm, because what is considered scientific is not very scientific at all. I'm reading a book on with an overview of modern science. And having read Prabhupada's books, it's especially Life Comes From Life. Prabhupada gives us the eyes by which we can see. Agyana timirandhasya gyananjana shalaka chakshuran militamina tasmai shri gurave namaha. Opened our eyes to see how these scientists, they're talking so many. I was just reading how this happened and that happened, and the so many things they're talking about, how the earth came into being, and then the atmosphere was like this, and then it was bombarded by meteorites, and then this happened and that happened, and different amino acids were formed, and they formed into proteins amazingly, because it's not possible. They even say themselves, is because even the simplest protein, it's he gives the example, you have to have the amino acids formed, and then for a protein to be, for it to work, which are the building blocks of life, you have to have them, all the amino acids have to be in the right order. So it's like something like a 1,000-letter word, and every letter has to be in the right place, otherwise it's spelt wrongly. So in the same way, every amino acid has to be in the right place, otherwise the protein doesn't work properly. And of course it doesn't work anyway if it's not inside the body, which is its only place where it can function, within a cell. So the probability of amino acids forming into a minimum 1,000 chain in the right order so that the protein can work. And then not only one, but others also, so they can interact with each other. Of course, that's still not life, but they're speculating on how life formed by chance. So the possibility is something like 1 to the minus 400 or something like that, which means impossible, actually. Even if the conditions which they speculate on, the perfect conditions for it to possibly do so, were there. So they speculate like this, and then they say this happened and that happened and something else happened, and they give a whole story, and it sounds quite plausible unless you realize that it's just total speculation. There's absolutely no proof whatsoever that any of this happened. It's just absolutely, it's science fiction. That's all. It's usually they say science fiction in the future, but this is science fiction in the past, and they're passing it off as science, which Prabhupada very succinctly defined as cheating, which it is. So, but then it comes back to, well, you know, it's amazing how this happened by chance. It's practically impossible, but it must have done, because the proof is that we're here. Wonderful logic. Superb logic. it's so foolish that their explanation might be wrong. They don't consider, but our explanation must be right because we're here, and that proves that it's all right. That all our explanation is right. And of course, if you go to the an overview of science in 20 years' time, it'll probably be a different fairy tale that they tell, because based on latest discoveries, in which we found that actually this couldn't have happened. And so, all right, so let's rewrite the script a little bit and pass it out as science and teach it in the schools. So this is science fiction. They have some fantastic things. They dare to speculate on the nature of the cosmos, and they have all these theories about the Big Bang, and then gravity, and from what they can observe, there's not enough mass in the universe to make the gravity go on. So they've speculated that there is a huge amount of unseen mass, dark matter, which you can't perceive, but it must be there, otherwise how could there be gravity? And then where does it all go to? Well, then there's black holes, because there must be, because it's a house built on a house on a house on a house on a house, but the foundation is a quagmire. So don't be... But when one story collapses, they just rebuild it with another fairy. When I'm saying when one story in the house, or one story in their fairy tale collapses, and they find that some new discovery, and whatever they say is not actually true, then then they make up another story. And there's so many things. So many things. Previously, they thought that life could not exist deep in the ocean because the pressure there is so much. But it's full of life, as they first discovered when they, in the 19th century, they pulled up the first transatlantic telegraph cable for repairs, and they were astonished to find it covered with mollusks and clams because it's so deep. There shouldn't be any life there, but there is. And I don't think they've, even to date, they've come up with any explanation of how it can exist. It's just, and there's so many things which just don't fit their theory. And it's like that all over the world. In practically every sphere of so-called knowledge, they're just teaching lies. Prabhupada is talking about archaeology. Anyway, why should they waste their time digging up bones to try to find out what happened in the past? We can tell you what happened in the past, that people were in Maya and they died, and that's why the bones are there. And you'll also become some bones which someone can dig up in future, and they're when they're in Maya. So you can all perpetuate Maya, and they're thinking about, well, the future generations, what should we do for them? And how the future will know about us, and they bury some things like a Coca-Cola and all features of modern life so that people in future can find out what civilization at present was life, or if life is wiped out on earth, then people coming from motherships from the center of the earth or from another galaxy, they can come and drink Coca-Cola, and maybe they can bring Coca-Cola to... Coca-Cola will live forever. They will bring it to their own galaxy. Insanity. They're thinking we have to, for the sake of preserving knowledge, we'll bury all these things in a few books and this and that. But what about yourself, sir? You're thinking about leaving this legacy for the future. But what will happen to you? What will happen to you? And they, well, when we die, everything is finished. Then why are you so bothered? Why are you so bothered to discover all these things? Anyway, you're going to die. So, and if it's all finished, then what's the point? Why are you so concerned that in future the human race will discover that we were drinking Coca-Cola, and that's why there's no human race left? And so the insanity. Even without reading Prabhupada's books, anyone who is a little introspective can understand that this whole so-called civilization, it's totally bizarre and insane. Yeah. And their idea that we just popped into existence by chance, and then after some time some meteorite will crash into us and it'll all be over, or the sun will burn out, or the earth will enter the sun and it'll all be over. Or even the Christian or Islamic idea that there was nothing and God created everything, and then there will come a judgment day and it's all over. And who is this God anyway? What are we, some kind of toys that he's playing with? Or what is this? What's the point? It's just ridiculous, this idea of linear time. But here we find in the Bhagavatam, in the Shastra, it appeals to our intelligence that the idea of circular time, that there is creation again and again. And because the tendency to not be Krishna conscious is there in the jivas, and it happens, it's an eternal tendency. So again and again the creation is there, again and again it's wound up, again and again things go on. Not just that there's in some, even if we take that, what is that bishop said, the earth was created how long ago? That was the accepted in Christendom for so many years. One Bishop Buckley or something did some calculation according to the Bible and said that the earth was...
I think it's like 5,000 years ago.
The earth was created 5,000 years ago.
5,000, 6,000 years ago.
And that was considered knowledge, because it's according to the Bible. So, and even there are some people, some Bible bashers, who still say that, right? They still say the earth was created 5,000 years ago. And then the day of judgment will come after 2 weeks or so. And when it doesn't come, then we'll put it back by another couple of years, and they'll go on their whole life like this. And so that puts the whole history of the material world, the whole history of the human race, for about 2,000 years, and it's just 3,000 years maybe. It's just a blip in time. And in the meantime, all those who don't bash their Bibles, they all go to hell forever, to burn in hell forever. Oh, what is this nonsense? That God, out of His infinite love, created us, and out of His infinite love, He sends us to hell, most of us to hell forever, because we're not in some particular sect of some church. You know that story, that about the suicide case, the man's about to commit suicide, and someone comes up and says, "Hey, you're going to commit suicide. Don't jump off the bridge." Said, "Well, I'm fed up with life. Have you read the Bible?" "Yes." "Okay, what church are you in?" I'm a Baptist." "Oh, me too." "So which kind of Baptist are you?" "I don't know. I'll make something up. I'm a Reformed Baptist." "Oh, I am too. That's great. So which Reform? That of 1812 or 1917? 1812. "Jump off the bridge, you pagan. Die forever. Burn in hell forever." So only those who are members of the 1917 Reformed Baptist Church, only they can drink the blood of the Lamb and live in the eternal McDonald's in the sky forever, and all the rest will roast in hell forever. So as Bhaktivinoda Thakur pointed out, well, he gave a synopsis of Christianity there, that God became a man and then died. Oh no, first of all, there was someone ate an apple, and as a result of that, man is living in sin forever. But God, being compassionate, became a man, and then he died, and then he came back again, and therefore God was killed. Strange idea. And then he came back after 3 days, although he was dead. God was dead. Nietzsche was right for 3 days. Then he came, and then he released mankind from the scourge of their foremother having eaten an apple. So this is their theology in a nutshell. So as Bhaktivinoda Thakur pointed out, no intelligent person could believe this. No intelligent person could accept this. So the Bhagavatam gives a much more cogent insight into reality. Of course, how much can we understand? Because we have tiny intelligence. But the Shastra is given to appeal to the intelligence of intelligent people. And that's a great difference between the Bhagavad Shastra and the Abrahamic religions, in which they tell you that, well, you just have to believe it. You have to believe it, and that's all. And if you don't believe this, then you just believe and you're saved, and if you don't believe, then you're doomed forever. And they all say that. So I was in a dilemma. What shall I do? You know, they say, all of them say, if you don't believe us, you go to hell. So what shall I do? Shall I make a little spinner wheel and put my finger on it? And this one is marked Catholic, this one is marked Presbyterian, this one is marked Islam, Shia, this is marked Islam, Sunni, this is marked Islam, this Aga Khani, this one is marked Jew. Well, I'm not allowed in there, so I have no entrance into that. So I'm finished anyway. I'm just a Gentile. So what's the hope if I'm not a Jew? If it's only the Jews are the chosen people. I'm not chosen. God already rejected me, according to the Jews. I'm not one of the chosen people. What is their philosophy anyway? If you're not a Jew, what hope is there for you? You can't get born again and become a Jew in your next life. You can marry a Jew or something and become accepted as a kind of half-Jew or something.
No, they allow Jewish conversions now.
They do?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, people can convert to
Jews. But previously you weren't. So what happened to all the Gentiles previously?
They became Christians.
No, but what happened? I mean, they went to hell or what? I mean, I know they went to hell, but what's according to the Jewish philosophy?
I don't know.
The chosen people, chosen to be tortured by Hitler and all this kind of thing. Anyway, there's no real philosophy. I mean, they have, in the Catholic Church has Thomas Aquinas, but just arbitrarily they accepted him. Practically they accept him, that means that the teachings of Aquinas are more important than those of Jesus, according to the Catholics, because he defined it all, right, isn't it?
Well, they didn't really have a philosophy.
They didn't really have any philosophy, yeah. You know. There wasn't really any philosophy. There were the sayings of Jesus, and then Aquinas provided something vaguely resembling a philosophy, and that's it.
He kind of grafted Aristotle onto the tradition.
Yeah.
He and Augustine too.
Yeah. But they had to. They've modified that, because according to Augustine, only men have souls. Animals still didn't get granted souls, and women only got souls around the end of the 19th century. So. Lucky for you. it's foolish, just foolish. I mean, how intelligent. Well, I mean, I can understand how science rejected Christianity. More or less, it rejected Christianity. But science itself is just, it's a more sophisticated foolishness. All the things they say. And the cheating is so deep. It's so deep how they make up all these things, and this happened, that happened, something else happened. About maybe about 20 years ago, I was on a plane. I was looking over my shoulder at someone's popular science magazine, which says that nowadays scientists think that life arrived on Earth from meteorites. Because they found out that practically it's impossible, according to their theories, that it could have come up by evolution. So it must have evolved somewhere else. It's kind of passing the buck onto the meteorites. And then it said, this happened so many thousands of years ago. Then after that they write, this happened about so many years ago. And then this happened, and that happened, and this happened, and that happened. And then there were dinosaurs. And it's all just based on a total speculation that life, and then that life arrived by meteorites in microbiological form, and then this happened, and that happened, this happened, that happened, no evidence whatsoever, total speculation, but they're writing this happened, that happened, as if it's a fact, as if it's a scientifically confirmed fact. So it's amazing the level of cheating that goes on. What's it like among young people in America nowadays? They still, most of them believe all this stuff, or they doubt it, or what? There's a lot of people getting into New Age, which I guess New Age is a kind of rejection of the accepted paradigms, but without anything really to replace it except some vague mysticism. But that is that a
for the most part, they either will accept this programming and be successful college students and whatnot, or they don't and they become very angry. Bewildered youth, then they become devotees.
Well, that's hopefully, that's like Jai Vedamar, and so that all the real hippies became devotees. They dropped out and looking for something else. So the real hippies became devotees. But it's quite a big movement, isn't it? It's not just kids.
Yeah. No, there's Nazis, what they call the goths. We were talking about this yesterday. They all dress in black and they're all, you know, they hate the government and the establishment and science and Christians. They feel cheated by everybody, so they're, it's kind of, I mean, that's a
Wow,
whole
that sounds
religion.
good preaching field.
Yeah. So they kind of reject everything at that point, you know. All religion is wrong, all science is wrong because they were cheated once, and it's like it's, but it's good. I don't know. It's good to talk to
And
them.
society hates them too.
Yeah.
And
What do they
so
do? How do they get their bread and butter? They don't reject that, right?
they live at home.
You've got to eat something. You can't talk. You can say you reject society, but it's very difficult to totally reject it. This is what we should have, our farm communities, all alternative living. This is the real alternative, with real philosophy. They can make good missionaries, Goths, huh? They become devotees because they have a feeling that we already rejected this society. Where are they? They're all over America?
Not in London.
Is it? I never heard of it till yesterday when you told me.
Oh, they've been around for
Is it? It's just so, see, so how out of touch I am with the Western world. Goth is derived from Gothic by any chance? Why?
I don't know, it's cool or something.
Well, Gothic, or Gothic wasn't a rejection of that was like mainstream.
Well, I don't know, it's been co-opted for that kind of, like, you know,
Anyway, whatever,
subculture.
we didn't, yeah.
It's kind of a counterculture, kind of not.
Well, that would be a good field to preach among. We're going to the universities and this and that, but maybe an easy, like a more ripe field would be the, instead of trying to get the straight kids, maybe we could go in for the goths. So then they're already more intelligent, in as much as they've seen through the cheating. They're like college dropouts, or what?
Some of them go to school. Some of them are.
They're weekend goths.
I don't know. They're just this. It's hard to say. It's like they're like this, like modern type, you know, hippie type culture where
They take drugs and everything?
Yeah, drugs. Green and blue.
Oh, that's what the punks used
spiky
to
hair,
do.
the big jackets that say, you know.
Oh, that's like the punks then, isn't it?
It's a mixture. It's a mixture.
Yeah, they're a little more. They're more civilized than the punks.
Is it?
They're more civilized.
Yeah, but some go to school.
Punks are still around?
Huh?
Punks are still around?
No, they're not. I just read recently in the news that that they're the punk descendants are much more well are much better well adjusted. Some people in the pop culture are saying that punk is dead because of that. Well adjusted punks. You can't be a punk and be well adjusted.
It's by definition.
Yeah, you're ill adjusted.
Adjusted means you would accept the inexorable necessity of filling your belly, and then when you get a family, then your children's belly, and then you have to get a job. That's it. We're all sucked into this society. That's why Prabhupada, his revolutionary program, I don't think our devotees have understood. Our devotees don't want to be revolutionaries anymore. They want to be part of modern society. But the revolutionary program, living on the land and producing your own food, this is most revolutionary, because you just cut out of, without money, because you just cut out of the society. That's actual rejection. You grow your own food, you produce your own necessities, and you don't need to have anything to do with the modern society at all. You don't have to interact with it, except for the sake of preaching. Of course, it's difficult because of land laws and all this kind of thing, but Prabhupada had that vision. He said in India, he said that there's so much land unused, he said, just take it and occupy it. And say, well, what? Well, the government won't allow it. He said, it doesn't matter, the people will support us. Prabhupada was quite revolutionary.
Maharaj, isn't there something like, I mean, just the way the world is today, that, you know, we would like to have farm communities and we should have them, but there's still for a long time to come, there's going to be some reliance on technology and modernism. For example, what might happen to India if India didn't, you know,
If India didn't produce technologically, then Pakistan, with their very minor technology, would overrun India.
Yeah, destroy the temple.
India's far more technologically ahead of Pakistan.
You know, not keep its nukes and everything like that. I mean, it's like,
yeah, it's a consideration. Well, then the Pakistanis, they can also chant Hare Krishna. The power of Krishna consciousness there is not impossible. It's not impossible. Everything's... It was thought impossible that that Westerners could chant Hare Krishna. So if Westerners can chant, then why not Sindhis, Baluchis, Punjabis, and all the rest of them over there?
It might require significantly changing their society in one sense, because, well, Westerners...
Pakistani culture is in many ways, it's very similar. They're already Indian in so many ways. They speak the same language, they eat the same kind of food, they dress the same way. I mean, it's not traditional Indian, but it's... I mean, they're enough... I mean, many Indians dress the same way as them, which is not Indian, actually. It's not traditional Indian, salwar kameez, men and women. Everywhere in Pakistan, that's all they wear. You do see a few saris, even Muslims.
But I guess I'm referring to kind of like the government and the culture that, you know, it's... You know, that if you try to be some sort of religion, I mean, we've seen that gradually over time in Pakistan, you know, that, you know, the Hindu, you know, groups have been, you know, gradually wiped out.
It's not true.
Isn't it?
Well, I mean, there are, there's not many left. They've mostly left there. But,
I mean, is it increasing? Is the Hindu population increasing there or decreasing or?
I'm not sure. It's probably fairly steady, because going backwards and forwards, there's not much going backwards and forwards. And it's probably, it's only about 3 lakhs anyway, the whole Hindu population all over the country. But they're into their religion more than in, you don't find this kind of secular Hindu like in India. Who are not interested in religion. They're all into it.
So under what conditions, I mean, social conditions or things, could like Krishna consciousness in Muslim countries actually flourish?
It's a big question. It's the Islamic world is a... It's the one frontier which ISKCON hasn't really made much inroads into. But I'm sure if we try for it, then in Krishna will show sooner or later, some miracle will happen. There are Muslims in the Western world that they're taking up. Iran is by far the most ripe field so far discovered for preaching Krishna consciousness. And if the society changes there, if it went back to the openness of the Shah's time, relative openness, it's not really openness, but even in the present conditions, there are so many devotees there. So that's a good field. And there are Muslim devotees in Pakistan also. But it's very secret, because it's very dangerous. There's a law in Pakistan, if anyone tries to convert a Muslim to any other religion, there's only the mandatory punishment, that the judge has no choice but Fasi Lagana. Hanging. That's all. There's no life imprisonment or reprieve, nothing, no choice.
But it's such a hypocrisy, and they kind of like so much into conversion of other people, you know. Such a hypocrisy, because they want the whole world to be converted to Muslims.
Well, they believe in it. We want the whole world to be converted to Krishna consciousness. Actually, you can't convert anyone to Vaishnavism, Bhaktistan, Saraswati said, because everyone is a Vaishnav. It's a little different. One thing, I know you're very much into comparing the social conditions and how they give rise to movements and this and that. But one thing we should remember is that Krishna consciousness is, because it is the jiva dharma, is the inherent nature of the soul, that although we may say it may arise in certain social conditions, and Prabhupada said that Krishna created the hippie movement to facilitate my preaching, the Krishna consciousness is not dependent on social conditions. It's not that social conditions have to change before Krishna consciousness can be accepted. It may act as a catalyst, or it may be helpful in that. It may appear to be so, but ultimately, the major factor in Krishna consciousness being spread is Krishna's mercy and the desire of his devotees to bring that mercy to others.
That's why I'm on my juice fast, because I have a certain problem which is cause of much inconvenience.
Did you turn that over? Turn that tape over?
Yeah.
Oh, you did? Okay.
He'd heard of the temple, he'd been there before. You are from Krishna? You guys are Krishna? They were like, yes. You guys are great. He was so enlightened about it.
We have Muslims come to Solar Street sometimes.
Yeah, it's for everybody. I mean, eventually, I don't know.
We have those Gothics.
They're all cheater religion. They see people will realize that.
Yeah, those
are.
We're devoting in London to the eventually central London mosque. To see what it was all about. He came back very disappointed because he said they can't preach to convert people. They can't preach. They had two Muslim guys trying to preach to him, but they were conflicting. They were like contradicting each other all the time, and they were shouting at each other, "Keep quiet, let me talk."
I've had to do it a couple of times with the missions and in parking lots. And give them a book, and they're like, "I won't take the book because of this and that." And it's like crazy, it's so ludicrous, you know.
There's still punks in England.
Yeah.
There's still a small pocket of punks. You see them occasionally.
Do they realize they're dying?
Well, they must do because there's no. You just see the odd punk. They have some clubs still where they hang out. But very few. I always thought the Goths were like descendants of the punks.
Yeah, it's like a mixture. It's like a new age mixture.
Yeah, and when you had the straight edge movement, that was kind of a, I don't know if it was an offshoot or, you know.
One thing's for sure, we have a lot of work to do. We have to establish these farm communities, preach in the Islamic world. And then, even within our own movement, there's so much preaching to get it, and to get things in the right shape, and a lot of work to do. Prabhupada has very kindly left us a lot of work to do. This. So, sounds like the Goths is an exciting preaching field. Needs lots of prasadam, right? Vegans, probably.
Well, vegetarian or vegan, both. I know a lot of them come out of this one. You've heard of Skinny Puppy?
No.
It's like an English group. They advocate vegetarian, like, big time. Mm-hmm. Been, like, the ladies. A lot of them come from there.
Ladies.
What's that? Anyway, well, I don't know.
Like the band is from the mid-80s, late-80s. That's where this band comes from. A lot of them are into that. Skinny Puppy. Still. They believe that what we do, the animals should be done to us.
Give them prasadam. We have a lot of work to do on many fronts. So, any other comments? But a lot of work to do, but the basic preaching strategies are the same that Prabhupada gave. Distribute books, distribute prasadam, have harinam, festivals, all these things. The farm community is one that hasn't taken off in a big way, but that's also an essential part. Prabhupada gave us all the things needed to make the world fully Krishna conscious. It is true also that I'm not saying that we shouldn't study the social conditions as that Prabhupada did when he first came to America. It's described that he spent some time for some time he was just kind of looking around and seeing where people are at and like this. He didn't change a philosophy or anything, but he saw where the people are at and because some kind of cultural meeting has to be there. You have to, it's communication. So how has America changed? This is totally from this social perspective or sociological or behavioral aspect. Has America changed? How has it changed since 9/11, 2001? There's been a big change in the outlook of the American people?
I would say that that people are more concerned about their safety and security. They're much less suspicious of military than they used to be, for example.
Jesse, it's a military conspiracy.
You know, when 9/11 happened, Harvard for the first time in 30 years allowed the CIA to recruit on campus. That's a big thing for Harvard University. You know, before, you know, in the 60s or the 70s, you know, with, you know, Vietnam and, you know, I guess the CIA scandals, and Harvard banned the CIA from coming to the campus.
And it must have unified the American people in a kind of even more we are American way of thinking.
Well, it especially scared academia, a little, shook them up a little bit, that they couldn't go around preaching their liberal, you know,
hogwash,
drivel, that, you know, it's like,
what, just tolerate everyone?
Just tolerate everyone, yeah.
You know, it also kind of strengthened this whole might is right, also, with this whole war in Iraq, you know. I've talked to a lot of people where, I talked about, like, what about all the people that are, you know, dying overseas, and, oh, well, they're not Christian. So what? It's like, geez. You know, we're justified in going over there because of all of this, you know, these attacks and things. I think it's a scary time right now in America. All of this
people do think it's them or us, and you know they may be right.
What's Iraq got to do with
9/11? It's kind of like a, I don't know, what is it?
It's an excuse.
Wyatt Earp or something going in to clean up.
It's so.
It's a different attitude. Also, they're putting all Muslims together in a sense. When 9/11 happened, they showed all over Muslim countries. People were having more like a Diwali. They were like having firework and dancing in the street. So they just put all Muslims together. Yeah, like everybody is feeling the same day. You know, so it's like America on one side and all Muslim countries together.
It's amazing how Maya works. It's just like they're like lemmings running to their death. I mean, they're just
sometimes I just wonder, not to be so apocryphal or something, if you know, this is kind of like you know, maybe an opportunity.
Everything we should see is an opportunity for preaching.
Conflicts, wars like this. I mean, this has always really shook up people. I mean, okay, you talk about the sociology, this, you know, what societies are going through, but when societies are shaken up, that's when people, they start looking around for other answers.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Just an interesting statistic to throw out since we're on that, is South Korea. In the time that they were modernizing, they went from kind of like an agrarian society to an industrial society. Their Christian population went from something like 3% to about like 35 to 45%.
And it's still one of the best places for preaching in the world. We've never taken advantage of it because, well, there was an incident in the 1970s where Chögyal Rámos went there and he made a big blunder in his, by presenting Krishna consciousness as spiritual communism, and they're being totally allergic to any kind of communism. They throw him out, even the mention of communism. They throw him out and have not welcomed our movement ever since.
They might do it now because they're actually favorable to the idea of unification of the North now.
No, I think there is some scope for preaching there. I might go there next year. Let's see. If I do this round the world ticket, I was thinking next time maybe, instead of stopping in Japan, I'll stop in Korea, which is just next door. It's like halfway to India or something.
But, you know, improving, what is it? You know, what is it? Going from 3% to like 30%.
That's a major social change. It's a major cultural change.
Yeah, we can't ignore those kind of statistics, if, you know, I don't think.
Yeah. Of course, only a tiny little country, but...
What tiny little country are we?
It's got more population than Albuquerque.
Here is huge. I was talking with my friend the other night, last night.
You met up with him? Did he actually come on the bus?
Well, no, this is another friend, the one that works at the co-op. He's one of these goth kids. He says that there's so many kids, I hear tons of them, that are just bored, you know, with everything, to the point where they start doing, like, all kinds of weird, like...
That happens in small towns. The kids get bored.
Yeah. There's tons of them. There's, like, a whole army of, like, really bored kids, and they're all, like, you know, hip kids.
Do they have a place we can come?
I don't know. I think they all live at home.
They all live at home.
And they all just hang out on the streets, is it? Yeah.
They all live at home.
They hang out on the streets. There's no place to go.
That's why we need a center. They can come on to here.
Do a lot of Harinam.
We need some more people.
We've got a few now. Right now. How about today? Where do people congregate on Sundays, if at all?
Let's see, we used to go down by the university, but Sunday not too many people are on the streets.
Miles but they said something about a fair or something, a people's fair.
Yeah, there's a fair.
You're going to
state fair.
Oh, that would be good for book distribution also, wouldn't it?
So, see, I don't know. I don't know if we could go into the fair and do Harinam.
Down by the door. We were going to go out on book distribution anyway. We could probably work the outside of it, the outskirts.
You could probably go into it. Why not? I spoke to one devotee who lives in North Carolina. He comes here any kind of fair to sell t-shirts and hats and any kind of things.
Mm.
That's what he does whenever they come.
Check it out. If maybe we can go today.
On a side note to what we were talking about, Maharaj, that was just interesting that you had mentioned digging up these skeletons. And I know that, you know, like the devotee scientists, like Sariputta, Chittakarma, there's one like Graham Hancock.
Graham Hancock?
He's not like an ISKCON devotee, but he's very favorable. He's best friends with Chittakarma. He's an Indian wife. He grew up in India. He's very they have videos and books out where, like, if they say the establishment digs up like a missing link type skeleton, you know, where they'll put it together and it's, oh, this is the missing link, or this is our ancestor, or something like that. They can, the devotee scientists can rearrange the skeleton to be a human skeleton just as easily, you know, where there's this misinformation.
Yeah, they showed that in that book, Forbidden Archaeology, that they dug up one bone one place, another bone somewhere else, and put it all together and said, this is the missing link.
Mm-hmm.
Just cheating.
And they can rearrange it to be just a human skeleton, millions of years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, human just like we are. So.
Yeah.
So.
They've found so many artifacts which are billions of years old, before the earth is even supposed to come into existence. No, sorry, before the... which by their dating methods are before the human race came into existence. So it'll have its effect, their work. Because the scientists, if it's propagated, the scientists can't ignore it. If it goes on being propagated, they can't ignore it. They'll just put their dates back, that's all. That's what they've been doing for years. They're always putting the dates back. There's major problems with their putting the dates back too. They say, well, life began on this date, and then they move it back a few million years. But that means that previously they'd said, well, this happened and that happened, this was all in place at this time, and therefore life arose at this time. But how can they, it's a very complex ecosystem, so how can they change the dates of all of it? It's really cheating. Because they said, this was in place at this time, this was in place at this time, all the conditions were favorable for creating life. So then they find that one, they find evidence or that there was life before that. So whatever they call evidence, it's all just guesswork anyway. But then they move the whole thing back. But then how can they just change the date of everything all at once? That means that they were just guessing in the first place, bluffing. It's not, I mean, Prabhupada in Life Comes From Life, in layman's terms, just showed how they're cheating. Not that difficult to do. Okay, shall we finish there?